This is Tiger Cast, the official podcast of Princeton Athletics. Now here's your host, Craig Saxon.
Welcome to the latest edition, a Thanksgiving edition of Tiger Cast. Hope everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving, or if you listen to this afterwards, had a terrific Thanksgiving with family. As always, you can subscribe to Tiger Cast through iTunes or your favorite podcast app by searching Princeton Tigers. You'll get the weekly Tiger Cast downloaded, as well as any podcast from GoPrincetonTigers.com or any teams within the Princeton Athletic Department. This is our annual Thanksgiving chat with the head coach of Princeton football, Bob Cerace. Obviously a fun one this time. We'll get to that in a second. First, a quick look at what's going on in Princeton athletics over the next few days. Friday, a couple of home games in basketball, opening with the women's team taking on Rutgers. That's a 2 p.m. start in Jadwin Gym on the Ivy Digital Network. The men will follow against Division III team Rowan. That's a 5 o'clock start on Friday. Both hockey teams on the road for Friday and Saturday. Women at Boston University, men at Bemidji. That's in Minnesota. And then Sunday, the Grapple at the Garden for the wrestling team. They'll take on Buffalo and Maryland. Women's basketball taking on UMBC in Baltimore. So plenty going on over the next few days with basketball and hockey, but the schedule lightens up a little bit here over the next couple weeks. And today, certainly a chance to reflect on this incredible football season. There's a lot in this interview. It goes about a half hour. We touch on a lot of different topics, but you know, a couple of my own thoughts. This is the 15th season I've done with football. Winning an Ivy League title is hard. You know, it's not easy to go through that grind and consistently, you know, come up with the goods in close games or put teams away. And this is a Princeton team that really, for the most part, put teams away. Harvard, obviously, the one game that you know, they couldn't get control of early, got into the hole, you know, made their way back to overtime. But once you get to overtime, it's really anybody's game. And you know, obviously Harvard won that, but the way they bounced back and just dominated teams for the most part. You know, the Dartmouth game, clearly the toughest one for them. Dartmouth, I thought, if you look at that Dartmouth team, because record-wise, don't look as strong, but there's a lot of talent on that squad, and all of their losses, except ultimately the Princeton game, were very close losses. So this is a Princeton team that put teams away early, kept them down. You know, I said it all year, but the laser-like focus that they had from day one, game one, through the end of the season was really impressive. And it's not a team that, you know, I think you look at and you say, well, this was the aspect of the team that won the title. This was a balanced group. Now, there were obviously key players. I mean, you know, John Lovitz is going to be probably the player you most associate this season with, and deservedly so. But, you know, 18 All-Ivy players, you know, we'll find out in a week or so whether Princeton gets any finalists for offensive or defensive player of the year. I think Lovett is a lock, and I would certainly hope that Kurt Haluba is at least one of the defensive finalists. We should find out on Tuesday. But it's a team that just played well, played together, played focused, respected their opponents. Teams that they were supposed to beat by 3 touchdowns. A lot of times, those are the games that you end up mid-fourth quarter, down 3, wondering how you got here. For the most part, teams that Princeton was supposed to beat by 3 touchdowns, they beat by 4. And so that says something about what this team was able to accomplish. And, you know, it's you always start looking forward. You know, that's the beauty of sports. There's always next year, and there's always hope, and, you know, what's going to happen. And so there's a lot of chance to talk about that. But you don't get many seasons like this, and so I wanted to focus this season, this conversation, primarily on these memorable last 10 weeks and what it took to bring Princeton its 11th Ivy League championship. It was a pleasure to join with, you know, the Ivy League Head Coach of the Year, a unanimous selection, a three-time finalist for the Eddie Robinson Head Coach of the Year Award, and just an absolute credit to the Princeton Athletic Department. Just a terrific coach, better person. Proud to call him my friend, and certainly proud to see him win another championship. It's my conversation with Bob Cerace.
Bob, we did our weekly podcast during the season where, you know, we touched on last week's game, this week's game. And so for this, you know, after such an exciting season, I wanted to go kind of more big picture stuff. And let's just start right with the quarterbacks, because, for all the accolades that John Lovett has received, hopefully will receive, and deserved, it really was the balance between John Lovett and Chad Kanoff that put this offense in position to do everything it did. Was it, you know, you went through this with Connor Michelson and Quinn Epperly. Did those two kind of prepare you for how to work these two together? And just how well did those two complement each other during the season?
Yeah, I think with Connor and Quinn, it started out as a, weird competition that turned into a wonderful friendship. And not that they continued to push each other and everything else, but they became really close friends. I think with Chad and John, and I think people see the success we've had offensively, we're going to get the 11 best players on the field. And it's hard to run plays when a Quinn Epperly or a John Lovett's standing next to me at coach. It just doesn't, I don't think it makes us better. And so, there's things that John does that are extraordinary in certain areas of the field, and we were going to utilize that as well. There's things that, Chad does that are equally extraordinary in certain areas of the field, and we're going to utilize that as well. And they're both getting better at the different things they do that might have been areas they had to improve when they got here. And it's just fun to see them pushed each other, study, prepare, and trust. And like Gino Auriemma used to say, when Diana Taurasi was on his team, you become a really good coach. I have Diana. You don't. We have Chad and John, and that's an advantage.
Quarterbacks, I mean, all players in particular, but quarterbacks really, a big measurement for them are touchdowns. And so when you look at Chad Kanoff's numbers, and that touchdown total just doesn't pop off the page. And that's, that's an area where, maybe he could have complained a little bit. And maybe that could have been something that was just that little wedge, in a team that was so together for 10 weeks that might have been, and it just never was. And I know, we know him beyond just that he's not somebody who's going to say that in the media, but like, it just never was a thing to him. All he cared about was winning. And he knew that, every time he hit Jesper Horsted over the last 4 weeks of the season and it would end up inside the five and they both came off the field and Lovett ran on the field and scored, he never cared. It never bothered him. And I've always thought that was a testament to just how much the team and winning meant to him.
Yeah. I mean, if Chad or, other guys really felt jealousy, then we recruited the wrong guys. Mm-hmm. Then we recruited guys that don't fit. I really believe that we're recruiting guys that, they're not worried about their own personal touchdowns. They do care about the touchdowns we score as an offense. And maybe if we played next week, we'd score and we'd break tackles on little dink and dunk passes. And they'd say, oh, my God, Chad threw three touchdowns and he threw three little flips to Roman Wilson, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't think we go into it saying, You know, we certainly don't end up saying we want John Lovett to break this record and we want Chad to throw for this. We just say, what are the plays and that we can best execute? And there's certain plays that, you know, and Chad certainly, by the recognitions of the other coaches,
right,
that they see how good he is. And the same thing with John, and, you know, the same thing with some other guys. And I think when you, and I was just texting back and forth with Steve Urbitt, and, you know, just saying how great it is when everything gels. And when you have two quarterbacks and six quarterbacks in a room, you know, not just those two, and they, people do look to them differently. And when those guys gel, and James Perry, there's nobody better in terms of getting guys prepared and getting them to reach their ability. When those guys do gel, the rest of the team sees that. It's really hard for the center to say, I'm not getting mine, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when the quarterbacks do that, because it is so visible.
When at the press conference after the Dartmouth game, you know, John Lovett made the point that, you know, before the season, one of the thing that, you know, one thing that, that people touched on about this team is, well, how will this offensive line play? And you know, you lost important players, you know, longtime starters from your 2015 offensive line. And, you know, you have three guys on the All-Ivy team. You have, you know, guys who did start some and continued to start. You had guys who didn't start. You had guys who were in high school last year who played. Did the group play better than you thought they would, or did they play as you thought they would?
You know, we expect them to play better than they actually played, you know, because we expect that. But, you know, I do think this, that, you know, Eddie Morrissey was a tremendous coach, and, you know, having Andy Arik ready to step up and do a exceptional job. You know, just like I just said about James, I feel the same way, you know, what Andy did, you know, with the offensive line. And I come down for one-on-ones and every once in a while, but, you know, I'm not, you know, certainly babysitting or anything else. That's him teaching those guys and those guys working. And, you know, the hard part is having enough depth, because we like to play a lot of guys. And I just thought it was tremendous, because, you know, you don't want to lose Jack Knight. Jack Knight started the year before, and he is a tremendous player and worker, and, you know, breaks your heart when a senior isn't able to play for most of the year. And Jack Corso had his ups and downs with injuries, and that really hurt our depth. And it was just, I really thought at the end of the year, you know, we were 12, 13 deep in practice, and that was making those guys compete and get better and improve. And, you know, there's some really good young players. You know, we played three freshmen in the Harvard game, and those guys played on and off throughout the year, with Riley Radosevich playing by far the most of them. But I really think that, you know, just like a quarterback, you know, Quinn is still working and playing professional football, and that's pretty doggone good. And, you know, we got two guys right now that I believe are going to have eventually some type of opportunity there. And you can be at the number one school in the country and be really good at football, both as a team and individually. And I think we got a really good collective group of linemen that's going to be in that same vein, pushing each other to reach, you know, the pinnacle of their abilities.
You flip to the other side, and that certainly is the case for your defensive line as well. And you know, we've talked about the guys all year and the play of Schlossberg and Ty Desiree and Burke Olsen, and you got some good young guys behind them. But what Kurt Holuba did this year was special. And, you know, I think we've seen it kind of since he's played. But, you know, you talked about some of the injuries that you had last year. And you know, you kind of go towards the end of the year and Rohan at Brown and, you know, Lovett missing the last three games. But, you know, people forget that Kurt Holuba played three games you were 3-0, and then he was out. So basically, you're 10-2 in the last 13 or 11-2 in the last 13 games he's played, with a pretty incredible run, a point differential. What is it about him? I mean, you look at him; he looks like a football player, but what does he do so well? Because I thought at times he just took over games.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing he does, and he never got to play with Mike Catapano, but he's gotten to watch his film and meet him and talk to him about football. But the best thing he does is the same thing Mike Catapano did, was attack practice with energy and enthusiasm and compete and win every drill. And Mike was the same way, and that is infectious. And when you got Kurt and Schloss and Brandon Jones and Ty Desiree and Burke Olsen, the way those guys compete is amazing. Kurt, I thought he was, certainly as good a run defender as we've ever had on our defensive line, especially as an end. He really is good with his leverage, his hands, getting off blocks. He is terrific that way. He wasn't as natural a pass rusher as some of the other guys, the two guys in the NFL, and it's maybe taken him a little bit longer to figure that part out. He's a tireless worker, and to see him lead the Ivy League in sacks and Ivy League games is just a credit to, Steve Urbitt, who just, won his sixth ring, which is pretty amazing when you say that as a Princeton Tiger. And, I know, Steve, how proud we are of the guys, the two guys he's got in the NFL. And, he beams when Caron Reed scores a touchdown and Mike Catapano is playing. And, Kurt has a lot of those same attributes as a leader and a worker. And I think people feed off of that on the front seven.
The issues you had in the defensive backfield last year were, they were obvious when you watched the games, and they were obvious when you looked at the stats, and you talked about it. We have guys, and it's just a matter of how well will they communicate, and how will they handle Saturdays, and so you got through the first two games in Lehigh, and you're wondering, how is this going to work? Now, I don't think anybody realized at the time just how good that Lehigh team was, but clearly, led by Dorian Williams, of course, but Gales, Melanson, Fox, Huffman, Floyd, those guys came together, and that was the play of this defensive backfield. Was more than just, I thought if it was adequate, that might be enough with this, where you had strength in other positions, but they were beyond adequate. That was a strong group, and it just kept getting better.
Yeah, you were at the banquet Sunday, and a lot of those guys won awards, and you just could feel the love they have for Jim Salgado. Mm-hmm. and what a great coach. And, you've seen some of these terrific DBs come through here. And, I know a couple people have joked that, I threw the D-line under the bus after the Lehigh game and I was protecting the DBs. And I don't think it was purposeful. But I knew that group was going to be coming together. They're new, they're young, they're inexperienced, and they're very talented. And Jimmy is the best. And, Jim Salgado is going to get them organized. It just might take a little bit longer. And, Dorian, I come into the office today at 7, and, Steve Urban, I said, he won his sixth ring. He's been here, so many years, so well-respected as, one of the great Ivy League assistant coaches. And he's on his board, in his grease board. He's writing these things on his board. And like, what you doing? He's like, has the 1989 team and the 92 team and the 95 defense. He has all their defenses, and he's ranking them. And he's like, who do you take, Dorian Williams or Mike Haru? And Mike Haru is just a phenomenal safety, maybe the hardest hitting guy I've ever been around. And I'll never not take my teammates. it's, that loyalty there. But I think Dorian Williams, he's got to go down as one of our all-time great. I mean, there's Dave Patterson, and then there's everybody else. But right after Dave Patterson, you got to have Dorian in the conversation. Is one of the all-time great defensive players at Princeton. He started for four straight years.
Right, and he started on two championship teams. I mean,
two championship teams,
right?
Exactly, and he is the leader of, you know, the team, that defense. There was no way we were going to lose, because I would go over. There's all those TV timeouts during the game. I'd go over there, and Dorian Williams was like Ray Lewis, and I just felt like I was watching NFL films in Ray Lewis, and how he was motivating the guys. And I had chills. I still have chills. And, you know, it felt awful today not being able to go to practice and see Dorian out there, and knowing I'll never be out there with him practicing again, because he's one of the special players to ever walk, you know, out of that locker room. And, you know, James Gales, when you saw him get first team all Ivy, knowing the journey and the path he's taken. And to know not only did he completely earn that, and how he played this year, and, you know, his Verbs had him versus Frank Leal. And Frank Leal is my roommate. Like, there's no way I'm ever choosing anybody over Frank Leal. And, you know, I think Verbs kind of feels the same way. He's the best cover corner ever. But Frank played man-to-man, so we never had to tackle, and I hope he's listening. But, you know, James Gales, in addition to being such a good cover guy.
Terrific tackler.
How physical were his tackles?
Yeah.
I mean, he just – and tell me the last time he gave a pass, a completion, that was longer than, like, 5 yards.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I tried to – I was sitting with somebody today. I said, tell me when that was, because I don't remember it. And – you know, Chance Melanson is, you know, where Dorian gradually improved every year, and there's this confidence how good he was going to be. Chance Melanson went from really having some struggles and not knowing is he ever going to reach his ability and be a varsity football player, to playing great cornerback, right? I mean, mm-hmm. He was locked down all year, and I just had the biggest smile when I had my individual meeting with him today, just because how far he is coming, because he is one of the most intellectual guys that you'll talk to. But to see him transfer onto the football field, the focus and intensity that he needed was really enjoyable. And, you know, Huff Daddy is kind of Phil Baya-like, Kamal-like, in that he organizes the guys back there and is always in the right spot. And, you know, again, the tackle he, after, you know, Dorian got the guy by the legs, mm-hmm. Watson, and his tackle on that fourth down was one of the best plays of our season, in making it. And that was an incredible play. And, you know, you said Marcus Fox, and, you know, there's not a person on our team that does not respect Marcus Fox, mm-hmm. and, you know, how he, both on special teams and rolling in, you know, a corner and just, really, I felt played great football this year.
You said something during that answer that kind of jarred a memory for me, or a thought, just from the banquet, you know, and you talked about getting a chill. And I remember from the highlight video, the biggest chill I got was, and you touched on it a couple times during the season, was listening to Darrell Napier give a halftime talk. And you know, so for people who may have missed it, just explain who Darrell Napier was when you recruited him and what he was this year, and how he became basically, you know, a coach, a mentor, you know, he played his part on that team, and you could tell how much it meant to him.
Yeah, I mean, Darrell was, if you told me who was most likely to be our number one player, it was Darrell Napier. And, you know, Ty Desiree, we knew had all the potential in the world, but Ty was a, you know, quarterback skill guy who was just growing into his body. And, you know, it was one of those ones that he had to physically develop, but, you know, to go from quarterback to defensive line, Darrell Napier was, to me, surefire, going to be a unbelievable lockdown DB with physical qualities. And think James Gales, but think James Gales for 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. and he had three major shoulder injuries, the last one in the Penn game last year, and just was never going to be able to play again. And that's, you know, athletic mortality is maybe one of the toughest things anybody goes through, and to have it end, you know, so young and with somebody so talented is really difficult. And he asked to be a student assistant, and, you know, he would be in Coach Salgado's back pocket, helping out in every way possible, you know, getting footballs, you know, helping the scout team, running around, and truly was the energizer guy on the team. And every day the team would be at stretch and there would be this chant, you know, DJ Durrell, because he's a DJ in the off season, and, you know, is really fits his personality, and the whole team would go like, oh, and it kind of like woke me up every day, like, okay, we're ready. And we would, we played a couple of our games, you know, halftime of Harvard, we're getting our butts kicked. And, you know, guys are kind of, I think, wondering, are we good enough? And Durrell Napier, about a minute before I was going to speak, just goes running around the locker room and screaming, you know, about how we're going to play. And he can't be out there. But this, and it was inspirational. And he did the same thing Saturday before the Dartmouth game. And it's really hard when you're the coach. And, you know,
it was incredible. I mean, that was part of that highlight video, and I was ready to jump up and hit someone myself.
You're the coach, and you're kind of like, go get him, boys. Listen to Durrell, because there's nothing I'm ever going to say that's better than what he said. And to be that mature and, you know, to do that, I just think the bond that here's a guy that was as talented as anybody, and to have an impact he had, is really the true meaning of a team.
That Harvard game, the locker room afterward was a tough place. You know, they put, you know, they put their heart and soul into that game, and obviously, you know, came up short. And you know, you've seen seasons, Princeton, otherwise, you know, other teams that have, you know, gone two ways after a game like that. You know, you come together, you rebound, you play well, and or you fall apart. At what point, and I know you believed in the character of this team, but at what point did you know, from the point you left that locker room Saturday, at what point did you know, we're okay, we're going to be okay?
You know, and you were in there, and I talked to them about how proud I was of them, and, you know, life's not fair, and, you know, there were some calls or some other things, and you can't, you know, as I told the guys Sunday, this great basketball player, Tyler Johnson, who makes $50 million. You're probably the only human being who knows him as well as I do. And it's all because of his heart. And he had a mom growing up that was a Marine and moved around all the time. And every time he complained, she'd say, get a straw and suck it up. And you can't have excuses. You can't look back. And, you know, it's a common theme the guys are going to hear from me, get a straw and suck it up. But at that point, I just told him how proud I was. And I went into meetings the next day with the coaches. And when you lose a game like that, there's frustration, there's anger, there's disappointment, there's every emotion possible. And the guys were just so locked in. And I just said, I think we got this process thing right. You know, me and you talk about the process a lot. And we got this process thing right. Sometimes the result doesn't equal what you're doing in the process. And we are not going to skip the process. We are going to continue to improve it and everything else, but we're not changing that part. And we got to go out there and, you know, get them to understand that what they're doing is exactly what we need to keep doing. Only we just got to do it just a little bit better as coaches and players and take ownership. And there wasn't the panic. There wasn't the, you know, kick the chair and scream. And it was more, you know, we're really proud of the effort, and we want a team that the university's proud of. And, you know, we got this process thing right. Now we just got to execute a little better, and I got to coach a little better as the head coach. And we do that, and that's all we can control. And let's take care of our business.
So, you know, we got 9 months to think about and talk about 2017. And I know you and the coaches are, I'm sure, already at work on it, but you know, we can deal with that later. The one thing I'll
we got like 3 months. We have 3 months to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, absolutely. And
their win streak. And their win streak. So let's enjoy that.
As they kill their lottery chances. but no, this is because this is one of the things we've talked about as in our Sixers talk. Hope, how much it means and how much it matters and culture and all that stuff. And the one thing that I took from these seniors, and Dorian, I thought made it most clear to me, but he wasn't the only one who said it, is that these seniors as freshmen learn from a senior class that won the 2013 title. And they just, whatever that class did stuck with them for 3 years. And they got the chance to kind of unleash that leadership this year. And it meant something to them to match what those seniors did. So now you move forward, and whatever they did this year is going to be left, hopefully not just on the freshmen, but on all three classes. We saw what they did on Saturdays, and you've talked about what they've done at practice. But in terms of what this culture is, it was left by this senior class, a 34-man senior class. That you talked about at the banquet is an incredible number. So how much confidence does it give you to know that these three classes that will return next year, and two that will return for two, and one that will return for three, that they are now kind of building on what was left by this senior class?
Yeah, I mean, I'm now on Twitter. Like, I joined the 21st Century in February because the coaches had an intervention. And, Caron Reed, is so proud of Dorian Williams and Tyler Desiree. Caron Reed had 5 mentees during his time here. And I know that means something to Dorian. And when Dorian goes to his next phase on his life, he's going to be that same way with TJ Floyd. And then TJ Floyd's going to be that way with the next group. And that's a really powerful thing. I mean, the guys know Sunday, I told them we're going to enjoy this week. And, we're not in the weight room, or we're not at practice, but it's time to be with family, and not only your football family, but your own family and Thanksgiving. And when we come back on Sunday, we're 0-0. You don't start where you left off. And that's a real important thing. But I mean, I just look at all the different leaders we've had, and me and you walked at Lehigh with Chad Knopf.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
That was as difficult a day as you could have as a head coach and a quarterback. And I need the walk to blow off steam and get my thoughts together. And, Chad needs the walk as well to kind of do the same. And probably halfway that 150-yard walk, I turned to him. I said, I'm taking the blame for this because it is my fault. But make sure, you take ownership. And, Chad comes across as a laid-back Californian if you're just hanging out in a room or a classroom or eating lunch with him. But he's one of the most intense competitors I've ever met. And the look on his face when he turned towards me and you and said, this will get fixed, coach. Trust me. I will get myself fixed. This will never happen again. And I worked with Quinn Epperly. Mm-hmm. And we've had the highs and lows. And Quinn Epperly was the same exact way. And I know somewhere in James Perry's meeting room, James probably had to do the same thing at some point and have that long walk and had to take ownership. And it's why the guys respected Quinn, why James was so respected as a quarterback, and why Chad and Johnny have that respect, because even though not every mistake was Chad's fault, he took ownership for it. And, at the end of the day, you can point at me because I made a million mistakes that game and did not do a good enough job. But Chad doing that in terms of the players looking up to him, and I don't know after that game if I can tell you 5 or 6 mistakes he made in the hundreds of plays he ran as a quarterback. He played about as well as you could play from that point on. And, give or take a throw or two. I mean, it's you know, bound to happen occasionally.
But right.
I just love how he took ownership, you know, that day. And I see the same thing. And, you know, when Caron Reed ran out versus Yale on his senior day, I mean, he had a look. There's no way we're going to lose this game.
Mm-hmm.
And Dorian saw that. And Dorian knew that Saturday was his time to be that, you know, leader when things weren't going perfect. And I just, there's a confidence. I was not Newt Rockne at halftime yelling and screaming. You know, there's a lot of confidence that if we started trusting each other again, we were going to be fine. And I felt that way because of Dorian on the sideline.
TigerCast is a production of the Princeton University Athletic Department. You can subscribe to TigerCast on iTunes or catch new episodes every week by visiting goprincetontigers.com/TigerCast.